This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On August 3rd of 2026, Greg Rausch became the lawyer for the most watched convicted killer in America. By that afternoon, a Fox News reporter had him on the phone. He hadn't read the petition. He hadn't read the case file. He never even had spoken to his client. But he was assigned Brian Koberger. Excuse me while I do a quick... Poor bastard. I'm not here to say anything bad about this attorney. I mean, talk about drawing the wrong card in the game. You know, it's like, oh, choose your own adventure today. Guess what? Guess who the state says you get behind? His stated goal for the day, or for day one, was setting up a phone call. Then came the rest of the to-do list. In his own words, I got to read the case file. I got to talk to him. It isn't a lawyer who dropped the ball. It's a lawyer who learned he had the Brian Koberger case at roughly the same moment the rest of the country did. The client he hadn't met wrote the petition that started all this himself by hand in his serial killer handwriting from a maximum security cell. Koberger turned on a defense team that cost Idaho taxpayers millions to reach this moment, thinking in his smarter than the rest of the room infinite wisdom, this'll work out good. Let me get rid of the super qualified that I'm not paying a single red cent for. Ann Taylor and her team. Let me get rid of them. Let me alienate them. Let me say horrible things about them in public. Question their ability. Question their skills. Question their ethics and their morals of spending those years defending me up until the very end. Who are still operating under attorney-client privilege, who were still there to represent Brian Koberger. I know better than them, because everything's worked out so well. Let me follow this path of alienating them, and also basically opening up Ann Taylor to share almost anything she wants about the inner workings of having Brian Koberger as a client. I can't wait for that book. Holy shit. Ann Taylor, I bet you love what you do. It shows from what you do. It shows from the quality of your work. And I mean that sincerely. She's a good attorney. If you're in that situation, she's one you want. But what Koberger just did, if you're playing the game of life, Ann, and life can throw you curveballs sometimes, I'd catch this one. I'd catch this one and go, you know, early retirement doesn't sound like such a bad idea. Because what you could now make by telling your story of representing Brian Koberger because of his carelessness and his stupidity of what he's saying publicly, you can sell your story for movies, for books, for TV series, for everything. Holy shit, the gates are open and it's time to cash in on the shit show that you were put into. It's time to ring that bell. It's time to pull the slot machine lever and take what comes out. You hit the fucking jackpot. Because Koberger is too stupid. Enjoy retirement. Holy shit. Although, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you love what you do, money's not the thing you're doing it for. You're doing it because it's what you love. So I don't know. But I'm just saying, if I got that opportunity of, I mean, you could, it's probably $5 to $10 million right there. that. If you consider, okay, how much longer you may be working, how much more you might make in that capacity. I mean, yeah, it's going to be up there, but it might be somewhat comparable. You might cut off a good decade or two or three of work because of the stupid shit he just said. I don't know. Okay. Enough career and life advice for Ann Taylor. Koberger turned on a defense team that cost the Idaho taxpayers millions to reach this moment. Whether that trade was brilliant or something much sadder depends on the small-town lawyer who answered his phone. On January 27th of 2026, Koberger filed a handwritten request for post-conviction relief. That tool works in three steps. A prisoner claims his conviction is illegal. A judge decides whether the claim deserves a hearing. And a win can erase a guilty plea. Erase the plea. And the case head back. Could head back towards a trial. The odds are slim. But look, who would have predicted Alec Murdaugh getting a new trial? His plea deal required him to waive his appeal rights. A petition for post-conviction relief is a very different instrument, and the waiver doesn't block it. That distinction is the loophole the entire story runs through. It's like, how did he do it? He signed that thing that said he couldn't do it. Yeah, he did. And this isn't that. This is a whole different mechanism. This is a whole different lever that I don't know if Bill Thompson knew about, the prosecutor, the DA, or whatever the fuck. But it's a different lever. It's a different lever that really no one can stop an inmate from pulling. There's no filing or admission of guilt that would prevent this lever from being available to anyone in prison, because it questions the very fundamentals of how they got there, and that's why it's in existence. It doesn't mean it goes anywhere, but that's why it exists. The claims inside the petition in the petition. Target his own lawyers. Koberger alleges his defense team convinced him to falsely confess, made unkept promises, and hid favorable evidence. And he used a lot of verbiage and words from that shitty book that came out about the broken plea. It's almost like it was Becky Hill level plagiarism, if you will. It's like, this looks really familiar. Some of these terms you're using are in no police reports. They're in no official documents. They're in this shitty book. And now you're using them as fact as you try to argue that this didn't work out well for you. He says the hidden evidence includes hair from the scene that was never sent for DNA testing. Never mind, where his cell phone was, where his car was, where he was, where he was witnessed, where his DNA has been found. Never mind those factoids. Never mind his shopping list. Never mind his shopping list after the crime. Never mind disassembling his car and wearing the gloves. And never mind all of that. He also alleges the team exaggerated conditions on Idaho's death row to push him into the deal. This one I find the most comical. They made it sound like it was scarier than it is, and then I made a bad choice. Okay. Every claim comes from his petition, and no court has ruled on any of them. The filing created an immediate staffing problem for the state. The public defender's office was involved in his original defense, and the petition accuses that defense of misconduct. Idaho handles conflicts like that through alternate counsel division. That division finds a private attorney, hires him, and hands him the client. You can't be represented again by the very office you're saying mishandled you. That's the machine that reached into Moscow and pulled out Greg Rausch. The team Koberger is accusing was built for a death penalty fight. Ann Taylor ran the County Public Defender's Office and took his case when he was arrested in December of 22. She held it for 2.5 years of sealed hearings, DNA challenges. The court built a specialist operation around her. Alyssa Mathos joined as co-counsel. So did Vika Barlow, a San Francisco lawyer with a genetics degree from Berkeley. Barlow spent 9 years as a dedicated DNA attorney for San Francisco's public defender. She came aboard for one reason. The state's case ran through DNA on a knife sheath. And she built an entire career attacking exactly that kind of evidence. The whole case has cost Idaho taxpayers more than $8 million. According to an Idaho Statesman investigation, the spending bought his side a result. Prosecutors say they had his DNA on the sheath. Taylor's team still walked him out of a capital case alive, which becomes your main goal. When your evidence is so strong, the goal is not necessarily innocence. It's keeping your client off death row. Mission accomplished. He got 4 life sentences, no death penalty. That was the deal Koberger signed. His petition asked the court to throw all of that work in the trash. Why? Because he's bored. Bored in prison. What's he going to do now? The replacement grew up in Moscow, Idaho. Greg Rausch graduated from Moscow High School in 1994, earned his undergraduate degree at the University of Idaho. That's the same university the 4 victims attended. He got his law degree in San Diego in 2005 and came home the next year to a small firm that he's never left. His bio lists the practice of this. Attuned to and skilled in. Chapter 7 bankruptcy, Chapter 13 bankruptcy, landlord-tenant disputes, DUI defense, divorce, child custody, wills, probate, and real estate. Seems totally qualified for a capital murder case. It's a trade-off Brian made, right? Felony defense appears there too. And the bio credits him with more than 20 trials in front of judges and juries. His firm cites lists him with the Idaho Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Nothing in the public record puts his name on a murder trial, a capital case, or a petition like this one, at least not that we could find. The firm's website still reads, serving North Idaho since 1974, and parts of it still carry the firm's old name. And the website that he's on for the firm looks like it was made in about 1998. Why? Because I remember designing a website of the exact same sort of layout or template in about 1998. It's like, oh, I see we've updated in the last 30-some years. Oh, no, we haven't. No. Was this a GeoCities site you guys used? I don't know. It's just, look, a lot of people have old shitty websites. Maybe, you know, it's just is what it is. You didn't need to update it. People don't really use them that much. I don't know. Public records on the man dry up fast. His profile on the attorney directory, Avow, A-V-V-O, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, shows 2 client reviews. These are reviews, not from us. This is not my conjecture, but what we found, both were negative. 1 complaint says he never returned a call, and 2 anonymous reviews on a website amount to everything the internet can say about the lawyer holding this file. So, Not glowing records or news stories of this attorney has been involved in this high profile case or this very tough defense and has done this or that. Just, you know, the person you might hire to get you out of a DUI on discount at the end of the mini mall next to Saul Goodman. That's my conjecture. I'm not trying to be negative on this. I know nothing about it. Again, I not questioning his ability. It's just, you know, you go from Ann Taylor to this. There's a stark difference in ability, in experience, in reps. That's all that is. It's, again, it is what it is. You can enjoy playing basketball at the Y, and you can also be an NBA player. 2 different things. Both may enjoy basketball. His law student adds that one more wrinkle, Rauch's degree came from Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. The American Bar Association later stripped that school of accreditation over its finances, admissions practice, and bar pass rates. So there's that too. That collapse came 14 years after Rauch graduated. He passed his bar exam and is held an Idaho license for 2 decades. No search turns up a disciplinary mark against him at all. An old website and 2 anonymous reviews prove nothing more about how a man performs in a courtroom. They simply show what vetting looks like when the state needed a name on a Monday morning. Like, hands out, who can we get? Spin the wheel. Koberger's side of the trade needs no guesswork. His own statements lay it out. In July of 25, he stood in open court and told Judge Stephen Hippler his plea was knowing, intelligent, involuntary. He said nobody coerced him and nobody promised him anything beyond the terms of the agreement. He answered yes 4 separate times. When asked whether he murdered each of the 4 students, yes. And then in July of 26, in handwriting, he claimed he was convicted convinced to falsely confess and advised to lie to win a legal victory. Both statements belong to him. One of them is false, and he's the author either way. The rest of the filing carries the same signature. This is the former criminology PhD student, a man who studied how cases get built, and he fired a team with a dedicated DNA specialist in favor of his own handwriting and asked the court to let him proceed on partial payment of fees. Judge Hippler noted that these petitions carry no filing fee at all. He claims he's innocent 1 year after those 4 yes answers. The petition stops 1 step short of its own destination. If Greg Rauch does this job perfectly, the plea gets withdrawn. A withdrawn plea sends the case back towards a trial. And the agreement that dies with the plea is the same agreement that took the death penalty off the table. The people waiting on the other side have already spoken. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador said his office is ready to do whatever is necessary to see justice carried out. Steve Gonzalez, Kaylee's father, he told CNN his family is fully prepared and confident Koberger will face a death penalty. He escaped if this were to go back. The family's written statement called Koberger the mosquito you just can't seem to swat. The finish line Koberger drew for himself sits inside a Capitol courtroom. His former defense spent 2.5 years of that $8 million case keeping him away from that room. His handwritten pages asked for the ticket back in. So the assignment carries no clean outcome for the man who received it. If Rauch loses, he loses the biggest case of his life in front of the entire country. If he wins, his client becomes eligible for execution again. Win-win, I guess. The Sixth Amendment guarantees every defendant a lawyer, and it never promised that lawyer a case worth winning, though. The man who hadn't read the file has all of that ahead of him. Somewhere in that stack sits the July 25 transcript, where his own client swore the opposite of nearly every claim Rauch is assigned to argue. The client himself sits in J Block at the Idaho Maximum Security Institution in Kona, about 300 miles south of Rauch's office. The town around that office will watch every step. Moscow is a college town, about 25,000 people, and the murders reached nearly everyone in it. Rauch will represent the man responsible minutes from King Road in front of neighbors he's known since high school. He didn't ask for any of it. The appointment landed on a Monday morning, and the national press had his number by that afternoon. The families had even less say. Madison Mogan and Kaylee Gonzalez were 21, best friends since 6th grade, killed in that same bed. Zanna Kernoodle and Ethan Chapin were 20 and dating. Ethan was a triplet who came to campus alongside his brother and sister. Their parents were told the sentencing in July 25 closed the case. Christy Gonzalez said the family knew they'd be hearing from Koberger again, and she was proven right inside of a year. One handwritten petition and one Monday phone call later, the people who loved these 4 students are waiting on a courtroom again. Where do you think it goes? Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'm going to go with a big fat nowhere. But hey, look, anything is possible. That's the scary thing. We'll continue that conversation in the comments section. Your thoughts there. Substack and YouTube are the great places to do that. Links are in the description. And if you've not done so yet, take our podcast with you beyond YouTube. Take us in the car, out for your walks, exercising, the gym, whatever you're doing, so you can listen. We got the same content and more over there on the podcast platform. There's even more there for you. Link is right there, the QR code on the screen. Follow it. It'll take you to your favorite podcast player and hit subscribe. Okay. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.